Well, for those who are newer to our church, we've spent most of 2024 and 2025 in a book of the Bible called 1 Corinthians, and it's a letter from the Apostle Paul to a somewhat messy church in the city of Corinth. And now that we're somewhat done with that series, similar to how we do New Year's Nuggets messages, for those who are familiar, we're taking some extra material from those messages that for various reasons didn't make the cut and putting them together. So I'm calling this message, no drama there, it's already up there, Corinthian Cuts. And more specifically, I've themed some of these cuts as life lessons on leaders for us, the church. So quick caveat, I know when you see leaders or leadership in the church, you might be tempted to think only of pastors or maybe even only of the lead pastors, but these are lessons that would apply for all Christian leaders we interact with, whether our life group leaders, our kids ministry leaders, hospitality leaders, our church council leaders, online leaders that we follow, and so on. So, life lesson on church leadership, number one, from 1 Corinthians, is to choose weakness over wow. A lot of the book of 1 Corinthians is about, actually, leadership. That's why there's all these cuts from other messages about it. So a lot of 1 Corinthians is about discerning the difference between good and bad leaders to follow and the treatment of leaders. And part of the problem in the church in Corinth is that people were kind of being wowed and led astray by these sort of loud and aggressive leaders who emphasized the sensational. And they demanded loyalty, and they thought they had kind of the most insight into what is truly spiritual, and they exercised their supposed rights as leaders. And this is why studying the Bible is always so relevant and so important, because issues don't really change that much over time. We find so many of the problems in Corinth in today's church, and including this one with regard to what appeals to people when they choose leaders. And one of my biggest challenges as a local leader, I think, is just wanting to, you know, just humbly serve the local church in relationship with people and create something beautiful together. But I know there's so many loud voices out there with very appealing tactics that are often harmful or divisive. And most of these leaders focus on really grandiose issues or statements. And I'm here with the very non-sensational message of heeding the biblical call to love mercy, to act justly, to walk humbly with our God and serve our local community and learn together what it means to be the people of God. And sometimes that kind of gets drowned out by more exciting and sensational messages. And so many of these voices are more about speaking to issues that excite people and sort of speak more perhaps to our fleshly nature than it does to the humble and crucified Christ in our local setting and everyday context and how to follow that Christ. And make no mistake, some of these leaders, as was happening in Paul's time in Corinth, are pulling people away from the true heart of the gospel, misleading people, causing them to believe that true Christianity should focus on these more sensational type of issues. Because the message of, you know, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you just doesn't get a lot of online clicks or YouTube followers. And in Corinth, Corinthian spirituality and leadership, it was becoming about these external signs of power, the leader's following or influence or strength or prosperity or their dogmatism and so on. And along comes Paul, who preaches the message of Christ crucified, who doesn't ask for financial compensation, doesn't live lavishly or rub shoulders with the powerful, who sees power in weakness and in cruciformity, who has a thorn in his flesh, he says, that is not triumphantly taken away. But Paul's not ashamed of it because he says it keeps him humble in his weakness. And the Corinthians are kind of like, thanks, but no thanks. We sort of like our boastful, charismatic leaders who excite us, who kind of preach what we want to hear, who speak the language that we like. And essentially, they don't like Paul because he's not willing to appeal to what they want. Here's what he says in 1 Corinthians 2, just as a summary of that. He says, "When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come proclaiming the testimony of God to you with superior speech or wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were not made with persuasive words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on the power of God." So, church friends, whom I love dearly, be careful what and who you're allowing to influence you. And in our modern culture, that especially means online, right? YouTube, all those places. Be discerning. If a leader seems to be stirring up hate or suspicion or fear or pride or causing division or anxiety, take a step back and just ask the question, is this making me more like Jesus and his call to love my neighbor? Knowing that Jesus' definition of neighbor was very wide, meaning everyone, especially those not like us, and whom we disagree with. Ask, is this filling me with humility or pride? What is this message calling me to? Is it feelings of superiority? Is it causing me to more and more associate with people who look like or sound like or think like me? Is it causing me to otherize, meaning see them as the other, rather than humbly fill me with love and compassion for my neighbor? So leaders can bring harm to the church by emphasizing the wow over weakness, because wow produces pride in followers, which breeds division, whereas weakness produces humility, the way of Christ. And so lesson number two for the church is that we should choose unity over division. One of the other major problems Paul is dealing with in Corinth is division or disunity among the body, partly caused by these loud leaders and outside voices. And Paul reserves some of his strongest language for those who would sow disunity among the body in this way. In 1 Corinthians 3, Paul says that those who make the church appalling by bringing division, he actually says they're not even going to be saved. They'll be destroyed. It's pretty strong language. So lesson number one was sort of, you know, we should be wise in who we choose to listen to and to follow, not being led astray by sensational or wow kind of factors that maybe make us feel like we're in the right or on the correct side of history on this or that issue or this or that doctrine that we're aligned with or this person or movement. But lesson number two is be sure that you're following leaders who unite people under the banner of Christ and his merciful cross. That's what unites us. Not leaders who unite or try to divide, perhaps, through other issues. The boastful Corinthian leaders that Paul is so upset with were primarily bringing division that was the fruit of their teaching. So where does that leave us as far as, I guess, a biblical approach to how we should discern and treat Christian leaders? I mean, I think it's a very important question to ask. I have leaders over me, some who maybe I don't directly get to choose, and also have spiritual leaders I choose to follow by, you know, reading their books or intentionally seeking them out. And I'm sure you do too, whether it's speakers you watch on TV or programs you watch online or listen to. Leaders will influence us, of course, one way or another. But what's a good approach, considering on one side we can be led astray, but on the other side we need leaders to help unite us under Christ and protect the unity of the body? So the last life lesson for church concerning leaders is that we should choose servants, not superheroes. I don't mean Batman or whoever else. Paul answers this question about how we should approach leaders for us, about how we should think about and evaluate Christian leaders in light of what he said about weakness, power, unity, and division. He says this. He says, think of us, that is, leaders, in this way, as servants of Christ. I mean, that makes it pretty simple, right? Hopefully that's essentially my job description. Servant of Christ. And if you're a leader in this church in any way, whether big or small, whether you're running a ministry or you have a visible position or you're doing behind-the-scenes work or you're simply leading by your lifestyle and focus of others, I hope you will adopt this definition of true leadership, that we are simply servants of the humble Christ, right? The one who didn't look for power or to align himself with the powerful, even when he had the opportunity to do so. And when leaders have this perspective, then they realize that they are not positioned for power or to promote their agenda. They're simply called and positioned to promote one man, Jesus Christ. And one thing, his good news for all people, of reconciling the world to himself. So leaders are not called to be necessarily superheroes or celebrities. They don't have to have huge social media followings. They don't need to be influencers, except for the fact that they influence people, hopefully, to follow the humble way of Christ. And when we choose leaders that are servants and not superheroes, and when we choose to view them as servants, not superheroes, it will help us avoid the temptation to choose or follow that which might wow us, or the temptation to follow leaders who would cause disunity. Because as fellow servants, we realize then that leaders are not perfect. They are not the leaders to follow, actually, but hopefully just trying to follow and point to the leader, Jesus Christ. And if that's not the case, then we should be really careful with who we're listening to. And if Jesus is their leader, Paul says later in chapter 4 here, that we don't have to judge them, because actually Jesus will do that, right? It's not for us to worry about. And I find this just so freeing as I consider those leaders that God has put in my life or over me, whether denominational ones or, again, those that I choose to kind of follow and lead me, that I don't have to expect perfection, because that's what I look to Jesus for. They are servants, but as such also, you know, deserve my support as fellow servants of Jesus, but also realizing that they are people who are, in fact, imperfect. So here's my advice that I think falls within Paul's overall teaching in 1 Corinthians. Don't get too high on leaders, because they will in fact disappoint you if you see them as superheroes rather than servants of Christ. And you'll then become sort of disillusioned when they let you down. It's kind of a running joke in our newcomers lunch, which you saw that we have in a few weeks, that I normally end it by saying, hey, you know, I know you're new and everything seems amazing and perfect and, you know, maybe this just seems like the greatest church I've ever been to. And, you know, of course it is. But, you know, but I say, you know, that's great and there are a lot of good things happening here. But, you know, just so you know, eventually we're going to probably let you down for some reason. Or we're going to disappoint you in some way. It's inevitably going to happen. And so Thomas has started to jokingly refer to this as the Oceanside Guarantee, that we will let you down. Yes. Planning on making that our new branding slogan. We're going to put it on the sign out front. Welcome, we will let you down. So don't get too high on leaders as sort of superheroes, but also don't get too low, right? Meaning, don't treat lightly or look down upon those who are trying to be servants of Christ. Treat them with grace and compassion as those who hopefully suffer with Christ in serving others. And again, this message is not just talking about pastors, that's not the point, but when it comes to spiritual leaders, do remember that it's a profession with high stress and huge burnout rates, which is why there's so many vacancies across Canada in the church. So we need to encourage our spiritual leaders who are hopefully making sacrifices without fanfare. In Hebrews 13:17, it gives just this very practical advice when it says to remember that leaders carry the heavy burden of caring for souls, so just help try to make their work as servants a joy. So perhaps the reason these points didn't make the cut, I guess, in other messages is probably because I don't want to be misunderstood in any way, right? That already kind of happens enough. I don't want people thinking, is Joseph trying to address something? Right? Was it that thing that happened recently? The answer is no, no, and no to all three points. We're not going out of our way to address anything. In fact, I wrote most of this material over a year ago in the series, so it doesn't have anything to do with any recent events or anything current. This is truly just wisdom from the text in 1 Corinthians and comes out of that in a very practical problem that Paul was dealing with in the early church and that God has left for us in his word. But do I see this happen and does it concern me? Of course. I see people get led astray by very grandiose kind of teachings that wow them or sow disunity rather than point to the weakness and the humble Christ. And I grieve when I see it often lead people away from church fellowship because issues that are secondary start to become primary and it starts to breed pride. And what a lot of these online voices produce is Christians who are angry or suspicious or prideful. And last I checked, those are not fruits of the Spirit. And here at Oceanside, I'm not saying we do everything right or our teaching is always right on, but I do feel pretty confident that we're not producing Christians who are angry at the world, but rather ones who love their world. That's what we want, and I'll take that. So think of this as hopefully preventative wisdom moving forward in our lives, life lessons. But hopefully by focusing more on Christ than leaders, it will make us a more Christ-centered, good news-centered, and gospel-centered church. And it wouldn't bother me in the least that if when people think of Oceanside Community Church, they think of weakness, servants, and unity. That wouldn't be so bad. Because that would ultimately help lead people to the person of Jesus, who had every opportunity to be a powerful leader, but instead exercise his power through the foolishness of the cross, who made himself subject to weakness by taking on flesh. And therefore, the Bible says he sympathizes with us in our weakness. The Jesus who said that he came to serve, not to be served. And Jesus who sends us his spirit of unity, which brings and binds us together, not as people who have it all figured out, not as people who are right about everything, but as forgiven people in need of mercy and grace. That's what I want people to think of when they think of Christians, when they think of the church. We are a forgiven people, and that's what this table is all about.